You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Westman. We cover the topic of encore careers regularly in this podcast because we think it presents an opportunity for people who are retiring, but not quite done yet. And today we'll talk with someone who's made a remarkable shift. And it's one that just may have some interesting lessons that may surprise you as well. A highly regarded referee in the National Basketball Association for 25 years, Steve Javy officiated 1,514 regular season games, 243 playoff games, and 23 NBA finals games from the 1986-87 season to the 2010-11 season. Highly respected for his game management skills, Steve was also a crew chief for 22 years, and during his career, he was a board member of the National Basketball Referees Association and a key contract negotiator. Steve retired from the NBA in 2011, and in 2012, he began a seven-year course of study, heard me right, 7 years, in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia to become a deacon in the Catholic Church. He was ordained on June 8, 2019. And he serves today as an ordained deacon at St. Andrew Catholic Church in Newtown, Pennsylvania. In addition, Steve also works with ABC and ESPN as a basketball analyst, where you'll see him shortly in the weeks ahead as the NBA season resumes. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'd love to hear more of your backstory. How did you go from a Baltimore Orioles prospect to becoming an NBA referee?
Well, Joe, first of all, I thank you for saying a prospect, because I think I was more of a suspect as a player than a prospect, but I did love baseball. There's no doubt. I've been a sports junkie my whole life. My father was an NFL official for 30 years, and my godfather was an American League umpire for 25 years. So I've been around, I grew up around sports, I grew up around officials, I grew up around players and so on and so forth. That was actually the introduction as a little kid. I would follow my dad to games. This is before the NFL demanded the officials had to be there like the night before. So if he had a game in Baltimore or up in Yankee Stadium when Y.A. Tittle was the quarterback and so on, and I would go up on the train with my dad, and I would sit on the sidelines, sit on the benches, and I'd watch the NFL at that day. And it was like, to me, the most incredible thing in the world. I had a father who would just, you know, was involved in sports. And again, my godfather, he umpired, I think, like three World Series. My dad did like four Super Bowls. I'm around these guys around sports all the time. And so I just think it was kind of natural as I went along. I never really wanted to officiate for a living. I wanted to be a baseball player. But at an early age, I hurt my arm when I got into the minor leagues. And they saw the writing on the wall. But I had no idea what I was going to do. And it's my early 20s. So I actually got involved, since I love baseball so much. I got involved with umpiring. I never umpired a day in my life, but I know I love baseball. And I went down to umpire school. There's umpire schools throughout the country. And there was one in St. Petersburg. And I went there and luckily finished the school, and I was assigned a job in the minor leagues and did that for a couple of years, 2.5 years. But at the same time, I started my basketball officiating kind of in college. I went to Temple University in Philadelphia. And I still remember one day, because we were playing intramural basketball, going to the gym, and there was this little sign on the gym: we need referees, $10 a game. I figured, well, what the heck? I said, I never referee, but for $10 a game, I'll do a few games a week. That's my, like, you know, my money for the weekend. And I got my first taste of basketball doing that. And I really enjoyed the basketball end of it, officiating end of basketball. So when I was in my early 20s, here I am umpiring minor league baseball. And then in the wintertime, I'd come home from minor league baseball and I'd referee high school basketball in the suburbs in Philadelphia. And Saturdays, I'd go to the local gyms in Conshohocken and work 4 or 5 games and making a few bucks that way. So I started getting involved in the officiating in my early 20s. And then by the mid-20s, I realized I enjoyed officiating basketball more than umpiring baseball. So I quit baseball and put all my, as you say, proverbial eggs in one basket and pursued the career in the NBA and got hired at the age of 25 in the CBA, which was the minor league for the NBA at the time. And then 5 years later, got hired. So that's the, kind of a condensed short story of like how I went from baseball player and so on to an NBA referee. But my father and my uncle, just being around them, they were the really factors of why I probably wasn't officiating.
So because I'm a basketball fanatic, I watched many games that you worked over the years, both on TV and a lot in person. And I distinctly remember that you were always clearly in control of the game. There's no doubt. So what does it take to be a top NBA referee?
Yeah, Joe, it's you know what? I think it takes a lot of great mentors. And I had so many great mentors, Joe. I like to say I never had an original thought. I steal ideas or I steal people's successes and I try to put it into my career and my life to see if it worked for them, maybe it'll work for me. My main mentor, of course, my father, even though he didn't officiate in the NBA, he did officiate college basketball, but like I said before, in the NFL, he really believed that officiating was, it doesn't matter what sport it was handling situations and controlling the players and the coaches and to be able to control the game. He preached that to me so much and knowing the rules. He was really a big rules man. So I had a father like that that I would come home to during my early years when I was, before I was married. And I would sit down with my father in my first few years at the NBA and we'd go over why I reacted a certain way. How come I couldn't control myself, maybe my temper? Where I was so fortunate that way because I'm sure most fathers, when their sons are hired to, you know, officiate at that level, or they're just like, they're so excited, they're so happy. And of course, they were never officials. My father was, when I first got hired in the NBA, I remember him saying, he says, okay, he says, now the work starts. You got there, now the work starts. So I think having great mentors, as I said, mentioned my dad, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my main mentor in the NBA, which was Joey Crawford, who's still my dear friend and refereed over 50 finals games, I think 39 years in the NBA. Joey was I worked with him my first basically 2.5 years in the league and ate and slept and drank refereeing with Joey and just sat there after games having a couple beers at the hotel bar and talking about refereeing. And I just watched Joey and he taught me. Jack Madden's another good one who was my mentor. Daryl Garrettson, my first boss. So it takes other officials to pass down the craft. And I'm sure it's the same way in any business. But for some reason in officiating, it's just a phenomenal brotherhood because what you learn, you want to pass down. Because it's not the fact that this guy behind, like who I'm mentoring is going to take my job. He's not. I'm just going to teach him to carry on the traditions that were taught to me. And I really believe that having great mentors is what it takes to be a successful official. One of the reasons. I think another reason, Joe, and I learned this at an early age, and I preach this a lot when I speak to younger officials at the high school level, whatever it may be, you really have to be objective with yourself. You really have to be able to look at this game films and game videos and be objective of like, I missed this call and why. It's the hardest thing in the world to do for humans. I really is to admit your mistakes. To be able to do that, because I think once you admit your mistake, then you find out, which is the big question you always say when you make a mistake, when you're watching video, is why? Why did I make that mistake? Why did I blow the whistle? Or why didn't I blow the whistle? And I think if you can get to that point of admitting your mistake, swallowing your pride and saying, okay, why did I do this wrong? How can I improve? Was my positioning this way? Did I guess? Did I have an open look on the play? Or closed look on the play. There's so many questions you have to ask yourself. And officiating is something, as I tell every young referee, be objective, admit your mistakes. And let me relate this, Joe, and I'll go off kilter a little bit. It's almost like when I first got married. I still remember one of the first arguments my wife and I had, I should say disagreements. I'm listening to her as we argue, because if you think about it, for those of us who are married, we realize that sometimes when we argue, we really don't know what we're arguing about. We really don't know that the right answer is. If when you argue a point, you're trying to argue and convince the other person that you're right. Because like if my wife started arguing with me about officiating, I wouldn't even argue. because she knows nothing about officiating. And likewise with her decorating. We were discussing this one time, having a disagreement, and I listened to her point of view, and I stopped and went, yep, you're right. I think you're right there. That's, yeah, you're right. And she goes, how can you stop this argument? What do you mean I'm right? And I go, no, you're right. I just listened to you. And she says, nobody does that. I said, Mary Ellen, I, as a referee, I know when I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to admit my mistake, you know? And she just sat there dumbfounded over it. She really did. You know, so sorry to get off kilter there, but I could just relate it into everyday life too. But I think it's really kind of cool that we can, as human beings at times, admit our mistakes, and it makes things a lot easier.
No, that's a great point. And I don't know if that worked with Shaq or KG. I'm going to put that one on my list. So it's an interesting point that you made, though, is that it's really about being objective, learning, and learning from others, passing down the craft. But what's unique about what you used to do is that, unlike what we do, you were doing it in front of 18,000 people live and millions on TV. So what were some of the ways that really helped you learn the most?
So again, going back to my father, studying the rules, knowing the rules, just like a salesman knows their product. So when you have an objection, you would come up with the rule and you know the rule. Watching a lot of video, I really believe recall helped. I mean, the video helps with recall and what you did right, as well as what you did wrong too, as I said before. So I think just being a student of the profession, and I was always, whatever I've always done in my life, Joe, I've always had a passion for it. And I had a passion for sports. And then when I got into officiating, then it was a passion for officiating. And I always wanted to be, like my father always taught me, when you do something, do it to the best of your ability. And the best, and that's all I always tried to do. And wherever that would lead me, that'd be great. But I think what helped me more than anything was the video work of putting the homework in, putting the time in of watching your games and watching yourself, and also studying and knowing your rules and knowing your product. And I think if you put them together with the good mentors, as I was talking about, I mean, it's a recipe for success.
So after 25 years, literally at the top of your profession, what led you to decide to walk away?
Yeah, I actually didn't decide on my own. My body told me to, Joe. I got to that age where running up and down the court, the wear and tear got to my knees. And my one knee in particular, which I had a couple surgeries on prior to retirement, the one knee, my right knee, was all bone on bone. And I remember in my 24th year, I refereed 25 years, but in my 24th year, it was like the first month of the season. I was working a game at home in Philadelphia, and it just, my right knee was just killing me. And I, after the game, the team doctor, Dr. Jack McPhillamy, wonderful man and wonderful doctor, my orthopedic surgeon, he came in the locker room afterwards and said, Steve, you got to shut it down here for a little while, for at least a few weeks or a month. And that's when we found out that I had, bone on bone. And I shut it down for a while. Matter of fact, I shut it down for the rest of the year. But luckily got a chance to through. And that's some story, if you really want me to get into, I will, because I just really believe that has a lot to do with my vocation now of what happened and so on, Joe. And I'll try to keep you a little short story of it. That 24th year, when I was shut down with my knee injury, I went to all the doctors. I went to some doctors in New York, doctors in Philly, and they're all just telling me there's nothing we can do. And of course, my first thing is, well, wait, you have knee replacements, whether they be full ones or partial ones. How about that? And they would say, well, these replacements really aren't made for the rigors of your profession. They're made for everyday life, that you can occasionally play a pickup basketball game if you wanted to. But for the rigors of a professional referee, these things aren't made for that. So I was now thinking about, well, this is like towards the end of my career here. And I still remember, Joey, I was down the Jersey Shore where I'm at right now, that Easter, that year that I was my 24th year when I was injured. And I was doing rehab, obviously injections, trying to get my knee back for my 25th year. For some reason, the number 25 in my mind, I've always thought if I put 25 years in, that'd be a great career. I could retire, do whatever I wanted to do then. And my wife and I were down the Jersey Shore here. It was during the Easter season. And I remember we went over to St. Damien Parish, Dennis, St. Damien Parish. We went over to Joe, you were saying that St. Damien Parish. And when my wife and I were going to confession during the Easter season, I remember, vividly remember this. I sat down after confession and I'm praying. And I'm asking the Lord, I said, you know what, Lord, if you give me my 25th year, that's all I want. I just want, if you can give me a 25th year, that'd be really, really cool. And the reason why I was being specific is my wife had just handed me her like a brochure. It says, when you pray, be specific. So I just went, okay. I asked and I said, look, if you give me my 25th year, I'm all yours, whatever you want from me. And I was going to daily mass at the time anyway. And my relationship with the Lord was good. But I just didn't know where I was going in my life, say after officiating. And darn it, didn't you know he gave me his 25th year? But I knew during that 25th year, when I came back for that last season, by the end of that year, my knees start wearing out again. And I knew this was it. But it was like the Lord gave me a gift. And then now, you know, I have to keep my end of the bargain up.
So how did things unfold that led you to pursue a calling from there?
Yeah, it was something, because I still remember I was very, very fortunate in the year 2011, which was my last season, that I refereed game 6, which happened to be the last game of the final series of Dallas playing Miami, and Dallas won the championship, their first championship there. It was in Miami. I knew it was going to be my last game. My wife was there, family members. And it was just incredible how the timing worked out where I was assigned to that last game 6 at the end of the season. So I remember my wife and I talking about it, even after coming home. I said, well, I wonder what's going to happen now. So that was June. And when I called my boss and told him I'm not going to be able to work anymore because of my knee. And I still remember, like, it was probably not till, I'm going to say maybe the end of December, somewhere around maybe after Christmas, beginning of January, where, you know, I was praying. I was like wondering what was going to happen. And it wasn't a matter of like when people like discern or pray or like what's going to happen. I was just in prayer, daily prayer, just talk to the Lord and go, hey, you know what, Lord, what do you have for me? Show me the way and make sure my heart and my eyes are open to what you have planned for me and whatever it may be. I had no idea. And so my wife and I went to a presentation by a Catholic speaker, Jeff Cavins, world-renowned Catholic speaker, and really, really great talk. And he talked about how God speaks to you. Now, mind you, I've been praying for 6 months now, 7 months for God to speak to me. And I'm listening to him say that. And I go, yeah, buddy, he might speak to you. He's not speaking to me. I know that. Well, he gave us an example. I'm not going to get into the long story of how God speaks to you. And that very moment, the word deacon came into my mind. Now, I didn't know what a deacon did. We had a couple of deacons at our parish. I mean, what does he do? How do you go about it? I have no idea, but I couldn't get this word deacon out of my mind. Told my wife after the presentation, we're going home, and I told her that. She goes, well, she goes, you better go talk to Monsignor, our pastor, about what's going on. And this is how the calling all started, Joe. It started in prayer. It started when my heart was open and my ears were open to listen. And I remember going to my pastor, talking to him about it. And he said, Steve, let's not get too, you know, ahead of ourselves. Let's just put one foot in front of the other. If this is not where he's calling you, I'm sure he'll point you in a different direction. And all during we had to, in Philadelphia Archdiocese, it's a 7-year formation. And all during that, I mean, up until, I'll even to be honest with you guys, up until the day of ordination, I remember waking up in a hotel across the street from the cathedral. And my wife says, now are you sure? And I go, I'm still not sure. I said, I don't know. I said, if this is what the Lord wants me to do. And obviously when I walked down the aisle of my ordination a year ago, which was just a year ago last week, I walked down the aisle. I remember looking up at the crucifix and said, I guess this is where you're taking me. And he took me right into the ordination where the laying on of hands and so on. So it was an incredible journey leading up to ordination. And it continues to be an incredible journey what God has called me to do.
So Steve, what was the transition like?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, you know, refereeing, transitioned from, like, say, refereeing to what we would call semi-retirement, because I'm working for ESPN and ABC right now a little bit, and then into the life of becoming a Catholic deacon. The transition, I think the hard part of it was actually the schooling part of going to school, learning a lot about our faith. We're taking master's level courses at the seminary. Here I am at 60-some years old writing, you know, 10-page term papers and taking midterms and finals. And my buddies who I play golf with are looking at me going like, you can't play because you have a what? You have a midterm? I go, yeah. I says, this philosophy course is just kicking my butt. I got to study, you know? And it was just, that was a hard part. I mean, because I was never a great student. I never really applied myself when I was in high school or college because, as I told you guys, I was a sports junkie. And that's all I cared about. I got by because, you know, I got my B's or C's, stuff like that. But now here I am in a seminary and I'm wanting to learn about my faith more and I'm wanting to get deeper in my faith. And I tell my buddies who are, you know, churchgoers and maybe some who aren't, but the ones who are churchgoers and who are believers, I say, let me tell you something. You don't know how deep our faith is. And I encourage them to take a course at the seminary. These professors were just phenomenal. My wife and I, because they encouraged the wives to go to class, my wife and I would come home from class on the way home talking about what the professor would say. The next morning, we'd have a cup of coffee and say, let's go over our notes together. And we talk about our faith more and so on. And I just encourage anybody listening. I mean, our Christian faith or Catholic faith is a journey. It never ends. And I just tell everybody just to challenge yourself to go outside your comfort zone and go a little deeper. And you won't be disappointed. Believe me, I remember saying to the congregation on my first homily, it was actually on Pentecost Sunday last year. I go, talk about out of comfort zone. Here I am. I mean, I went from wearing a referee's jersey to with a whistle to these vestments on. I said, talk about out of your comfort zone. Come on. I said, but it's funny. Once you do it for the Lord, he'll never be outdone. He'll pull you in. And you know what? My deacon friend, who is just a wonderful mentor, Deacon Rich Napoli, told me, once you take that first step out of your comfort zone, you'll never take a step backwards. You'll just be encouraged to take another step forward. And the Lord meets you there. So the transition, although difficult with schooling, I think once I was ordained, the transition now into parish life has been really, really a wonderful transition. I'm blessed to be at the largest parish in the Philadelphia Archdiocese, St. Andrew Parish in Newtown. And I have the best, without a doubt, the best pastor that there is. I mean, this man, Monsignor Michael Picard, is a fellow brother in Christ with me, but he's a mentor also, and he's a friend. And it's just, I am so blessed in my life to have people like him and other young priests who I met at the seminary when we're going to classes that have said yes in their life to the Lord. And I just can't believe that the Lord had this plan for me all along, and that I luckily had my eyes and, like I say, my heart open to saying yes, because it's been the greatest. I only thought that refereeing 15 years in the finals and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, Dr. J, all these guys, I only thought that was good. Nothing compares to what I'm going through right now. Nothing. I love my career. I tell people when I come back in my next life, if there is one, I want to come back as me. That's how much I love my career. And I love the people that God has put in my life. And I just, but I'm telling you, this, my spiritual journey has been just incredible. And the two don't even compare.
And Steve, what's your life like today versus before?
Yeah, well, obviously with all of us with the pandemic, yeah, right, it's a little different because now the churches are finally open. Before BC, before Corona, right, BC, it's in the parish life, my pastor, the one thing he really wanted us as my first year is concentrate on preaching. He just felt that preaching was such is such a big deal nowadays. And I know in our Catholic faith, the Eucharist is the big deal. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. The true presence of Jesus Christ and the bread and wine as his body, blood, soul, and divinity. But we know, all of us know who go to church, all of us know how preaching is a really big fundamental part of it, where we've all been there, guys, right? When we sit in the pew, when we're sitting in pews and we look and go, oh, geez, not him today. You know, that we've all been there. Luckily at St. Andrew, we have great preachers there. And it's really kind of intimidating because when I'm assigned to my parish, I know how good all the preachers are. And if I could just hold my end up a little bit, then everything's going to be okay. But he has us preaching like every 2 weeks of the deacons at our church. We have baptisms. We go visit the people in the other homes and give them communion and so on. So right, the first year, it's been really, really, really cool. I want to get into, you know, more of the parish life, more so involved more. But I know that we have to balance that with our family lives, you know, in the parish. And my pastor's wonderful that way, too. He doesn't want to take too much away from the family life. And especially when I ask him to come down to shore every once in a while, maybe cook a pasta dinner for us. He likes coming down with that, doing that, too.
That's great.
Just want to jump in here real quickly. Steve, we often talk to people that start new careers and in their retirement life, and they find that the skills that they got from their former life can be very useful in bringing forward with them into their next act. What skills did you think you brought with you from 25 years in the NBA And then how do they help you today?
Yeah. Trying to, like you said, handle Shaq and handle like, you know, all these guys on the floor, Allen Iverson, all that. How do you handle that? And all? I first think that it's helped me with my preaching, number one, that I'm not afraid to be in front of people, which I've given talks before with regard to officiating. I think that helps me too. But also to be able to, you know, listen, because a lot of people have some questions about our faith. They can disagree with, and I know not everybody who comes to church agrees with all the church teachings. I didn't when I grew up. It wasn't the fact that I was this altar boy, although I was an altar boy. I wasn't this saintly person by any means. And I was probably everywhere these people who are in church are now with regard to believing some of the things some of the time, but I don't believe this. Going to church sometimes, not all the time. I kind of can relate to them. And so when they can come to talk to me and they maybe disagree about like a church teaching, I can try to explain to them, and that's why I always try to keep up, why the church teaches certain things. I think what got me really hooked on learning more about my faith and the Catholic faith was the fact that with all this social media and Googling all this stuff, I tell my nephews this right now, is that you're quick to Google who holds the record for this sport, that sport, who had many home runs and so on. Well, how about like if you doubt the church's teaching, why don't you Google why does the church teach that? That's what I did. And once the older I got and I start Googling the teachings that I disagreed with at a younger age, and now at an older age would Google that, I'm now informing myself and saying, yeah, that makes sense. Of course the Lord would teach it this way, because it's not me saying the church is teaching. It's the Lord in Scripture that says these things that we should be doing, like the Ten Commandments, and why should we, you know, not do this and why should we do that? And I think that prepared me of getting to know, if you want to say, the rule book or why the church teaches certain things. So when people come to me knowing of like saying, well, you know what? I disagree the church should allow this or they should allow that. They should be more liberal here or more. And I would try to, and then I'll just sit there and listen to them and just take it in instead of being defensive and just talk to them about it and be more pastoral that way. So I think that listening, as I listened to the players who disagreed with me and my calls on the floor, I'm listening now to parishioners who disagree with the church's teachings at times. And I can kind of relate to that too. And the other thing with regard to putting is like handling like just different situations, even when it comes to me ministering on the altar, whether it be like, was it the ordination of the cathedral last week with the archbishop or just in daily mass or Sunday mass, if things go wrong, I don't get flustered. It's like, okay, just take your time, do this, do that. And I was taught by some mentor deacons, just be deliberate on the altar. Don't go herky-jerky. And it's the same thing with on the court. Your demeanor has to be like, because the parishioners don't know when you mess up. And the fans don't, well, the fans think you mess up when you make a bad call. But you can't show your emotion. And that's what I did. So, yeah, a lot of the things, that's a good question. A lot of the things that I did learn, I apply. And a lot of it has to do with just, you know, handling situations too.
In the article that you did with NBA.com, you made a point about, and I think it resonated in what you just said, and I just want to bring it up because it resonated so much with me and started me reflecting. And the point you made, and I may not get the quote right, Steve, but you said, accept people where they are and then work through it. And I was like, wow, that's very powerful when you're communicating and talking to people. So I just want to say thanks for that. It was really good.
No, you're welcome. It's something – guys, I'm not great at all the time because we all are human and we have our thoughts and our judgments at times and so on. But I found that instead of me just trying to tell people or like here's what it is and here's what you got, if you just listen, man, and because here's the, like I said just earlier, I've been just about every place that a Catholic could be and their faith. I mean, like when you're younger, when you're not going to church, and older when you don't believe in the church's teachings, especially because here's the weird thing. We usually don't believe in the church's teachings because they're the ones that we're going to break. Those commandments are going to break. It's funny. The other commandments, yeah, I believe this one, and this one, and I can, but this one over here, I don't. And that's the way I was. I picked and choose the ones I didn't like. I knew were the ones I was going to break. That's why I didn't like it. So I can relate to that person who is in a situation now that maybe this has happened in their life and that's happened in their life. And you know what? You just try to see them through it and take that walk with them, and be like empathetic with them, and go through that journey with them. And then maybe during the whole thing, when you do that and you don't judge the person, then they'll sit there and go, you know what? Maybe I'll just give this my faith a try again. Maybe I'll give it another shot. And that's all I want them to do. My one classmate once said to me, and he answered a question that a professor posed to our class: why do you want to become deacons? And I'm like, or what should a deacon do? And basically, my classmate said, to bring Jesus Christ to people. And I went, wow, you know what? That's as simple as that. And I truly believe that in the way we act, in the way we talk, and everything and all. It's like being Christ to other people and try to bring them closer in a relationship, because our faith is all about a relationship. It's not rules. It's not regulations. Our faith is a relationship with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And my goal when I pray is to ask the Lord every day to give me the wisdom and the courage to bring people to Him, that they can have a relationship with Him.
Steve, what gives you the greatest satisfaction these days?
Wow, the greatest satisfaction. I love, first off, I'll speak selfishly, being a human being, which I'm a very selfish person at times. The satisfaction of being on the altar, of serving with these men, these priests who have given their whole lives to the Lord and to the church, to be able to serve them. And that's what I tell every young seminarian that I've met. And I says, I hope someday that I can be on the altar to serve you, because in this day and age, we know, guys, everything that's going on in social media and this, and how the persecution of Christians, which is really going on before our eyes during even this pandemic. And for these men to say yes to their calling, the satisfaction of being on the altar and to be able to serve them, the satisfaction of like when I just talk to some of my buddies, when I play golf, I mean, all my buddies know what I do. So I don't go out there preaching to them or anything like that. But every once in a while, like a buddy will ask me a question. Like, and I go in a locker room after playing golf prior to the pandemic, of course, because you can't go into locker rooms now. But like in my locker room at golf, I've been at this one golf course for, you know, almost my whole life. And the last 5 years, guys are opening up to me about their faith, and not all positive either. I mean, it's not a matter of, oh, I did. It's their problems, what they're wearing on their heart and their sleeve. And I just get satisfaction out of them, because it's like they have this inner urge to want to talk about their faith. And I just get such great satisfaction that they feel comfortable coming to me and telling me about certain things or asking me about certain things. And we sit and have a great conversation. I might disagree. I might not say a word, because I might be getting a little, you know, PO in the back of my mind. But I said, no, he's opening his heart to me, man. It's like, just listen. And it gives me satisfaction that these men that I'm with have the courage themselves and feel the comfort to be able to approach me to talk about their faith. And I think my wife and I have talked about this, guys, is that, you know, I always wonder and always pray to the Lord, and I still do, is like, how did you do this to me? Or why did you do this for me? And I truly, really believe that my calling, he's calling me to help men like me who are struggling with my faith, who are confused with my faith, and to give men the comfort level to be able to come to me, to talk to me about their faith. I think maybe this is my calling. I search for that all the time, and I ask him to try to point that out to me, to be able to have men talk about their faith, to open up about their faith and be comfortable about it. And who knows, maybe he's pointing me in this direction, but it's a lot of satisfaction I get out of that, guys. I really do, of like men being able to open up, because we men have to be the spiritual leader of our families. And we've taken the back seat to the women all our lives. And this is not being sexist. It's the men that have to be spiritual leaders just by statistics alone. And if you read statistics, I'll just throw a couple out quickly. If children see their father going to mass every Sunday, I think the statistic is like 60% chance, 60% or higher, that the children will go to church every Sunday. If they see just their mother go, it's like 18%. So we men have a responsibility, a spiritual responsibility to our families, to lead our families spiritually. And if I can be a help, a process in that, where men can get to their families, that they can be the spiritual leaders, then maybe that's where God's calling me.
So Steve, in these times, many people are considering making a career change. And I don't really know anyone who's made such a dramatic career change as you have. What advice would you offer them?
Yeah, that's good. Oh my gosh, I know. You say a dramatic career change. Yeah, it has been. You're right. Some of my college buddies that I haven't seen in a while go, Javi's what now? He's a deacon in the church? They can't believe it, you know, let alone me. But what advice? I would just say to be open really to anything, not to pigeonhole yourself. I know when I was retiring, I was offered a couple jobs here and there and so on. And I was lucky I didn't jump into it. And the advice I would give somebody who is retiring is to take some time, some quiet time. First of all, number one, since you've probably been working for a number of years, don't jump into something right away too quickly. To take that quiet time, number one, with your family, that you can now spend time with your family, because we as men, we know what it's like. We sit there and we're the providers, and we're always working, and we're working too hard, and we don't see our families. To get that adjustment period, to get to know your wife again and your family again, if you have any children at home. If not, maybe get to know that person who's put up with us all these years and are working. And don't jump right into another phone call because your ego says, hey, you know, this company wants me, or that company wants me to be a consultant, or they're going to pay me this. I think we deserve it to just sit back and relax. And I think within 6 months to a year or whatever it may be, I think then you can say, you know what, I'm ready maybe to do something, and to really pray on it, to really ask the Lord in daily prayer. And this is where daily prayer really happens. And I'm not saying you're praying 10 hours a day. I'm saying make prayer a priority in your life during the day. I know with myself, the first thing I do in the morning when the coffee's on, I put the coffee on, grab a cup of coffee, and I have a prayer chair and I sit there. And, you know, I'm not really great at prayer all the time, because my prayer sometimes starts with like, our Father who art in heaven. Oh, I got this to do today. I got that to do today. What am I going to do today? And all of a sudden my mind wanders every which way. All of our minds wander, but we just should show up though. Show up in prayer every day. And even if it wanders, get it back again. And I try to talk to God as I'm talking to you guys of like, Lord, what do you want me to do? And help me today, because I'm really weak. I got something going on. But even with the time when I was talking to him with regard to what am I going to do in retirement, I think people in retirement should sit and say, Lord, show me a sign. Give me a sign of what you think is right for me. Where are you leading me in my, and I'm not saying they're going to lead them down the path of, say, a life of an ordained minister or something, but who knows? If there is a job that's open, pray. If someone has called you, just say, Lord, please give me a sign of, if this is the right thing to say yes to in my career or in my second career. And I really believe if we just take our time, don't jump into things, and spend some quiet time with the Lord daily, I don't think you can go wrong. I think you can't miss.
Yeah, I think you also reminded us how important it is to be connected spiritually as we retire. I mean, look, we were talking before, we're all around the same age, 65, and people are going through that number, whatever that number means to people, but people go into this next stage of their life. And it's important to not only continue to be active and do certain things, but it's also very important to stay connected spiritually and find ourselves in so many ways. And I like the whole idea of show up every day and the daily prayer and your prayer chair. I just think it's very, very powerful stuff. It's important to stay connected. We shouldn't forget
that. No, it is. You're right. Yeah. I agree. Yep.
Steve, thank you so much for sharing your story and your advice. I know it's going to help a lot of us. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure. And God bless both of you and your families. And you know what? Be well and be safe.
Same to you, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Wow, that was a great conversation with Steve Javi. Dennis, what jumps out to you as some key takeaways?
I agree. It was a wonderful, great conversation with Steve. Really appreciated his time today. So a couple of things stood out to me. When we asked him, when you asked him, what does it take to be a top NBA referee? He mentioned having great mentors, and role models became very important to him. He mentioned his father as a great role model for his wanting to get into sports and refereeing. I believe he also mentioned some of the NBA referees that were side by side with him, but helped him really through his career. The second thing that he said was being objective with yourself. I thought that was just great to really hear someone say, hey, you know, I would look at what I did after the game. I'd look at the tape. I'd go to the videotape. I'd look at my mistakes. I'd look at what I did right, what I did wrong. And it was very important that people admit their mistakes and take some self-reflection. And he felt that gets you to the top of your game, so to speak. And the third thing was having a passion and being a student of the game. And what I found interesting, Joe, is when we talked about his transition to becoming a deacon, it was interesting that there was some really good commonality here, that mentoring was important to him. He had a very strong mentor in helping him become a deacon. The listening to his wife and praying helped him really do some self-reflection and be objective with himself. He's very honest and practical about his approach to this, the passion he had about this next part of his life. So I heard mentors, I heard being objective with yourself, and I heard passion about three critical things to help you with whatever, with whatever you decide to do. Those are three key things. And then finally, the last thing that I would mention is the aspect of spirituality, especially when you reach into this next stage of life, the stage that we call retirement, whether we like the name or not. It's that stage of life. And let's not forget that as part of something that people should really assess and use spirituality as a way of balancing your life, not only helping people and a lot of things we do when we retire, whether it's volunteering, whether it's spending time with our grandchildren, whether it's socializing, whether it's working, all the different things. But I think spirituality, taking care of oneself, both physically, mentally, and spiritually, are really important. So those are the things I got out from Steve today. Again, really great show. Joe, what about yourself?
So I think his story is so compelling and just so riveting that it's easy to dismiss it as, how could that have anything to do with me? But I found a lot of things can have a lot to do with people transitioning into retirement or into a second act encore career after what they've done as a primary career. I think a lot of them are very, very relevant. And let's talk about the word calling, because I raised it, he used it, and that's something that is very appropriate to certainly his journey. But I hear that term often used by people who pursue some other second career with meaning, looking at what Richard Rohr wrote about in the book Falling Upward, moving from success to significance. And that's what I heard when I was listening to him, a lot of the success to significance, even though he didn't put it in those terms. And then the second thing was, you don't make a switch like that without putting in the real-time preparation. He talked about a 7-year process. Now, most careers won't require that, but people making a move should think about, am I prepared to put the work in to make this pivot? I thought it was fascinating to hear him talk about really how important it is to be open, to listen, so you can hear something that's calling you in a different direction, and to give yourself some time. Don't jump into the first thing. Don't pigeonhole yourself. Make sure you're really thoughtful and give yourself space to really discern and learn what you want to do next. So I thought there was just a lot of great things that can apply to many people, and just a great person to talk with. As a basketball fanatic, I had to bite my tongue through most of it because there were about 33 basketball questions I would like to ask him about, but that wasn't the purpose of the discussion. But it was great to hear his story and great to hear how he gets really satisfaction these days. Whole different life and a lot of lessons for all of us.
Hey, Steve's a great guy to have back on at some point. Check in with him and see how his progress is going. He's got a lot to offer. Great observation, Joe.
And with the NBA coming back, hopefully in a matter of weeks, you'll see him opining on the referee calls as an analyst with both ESPN and ABC, which he does part-time. That's great. Thanks for listening, and we'll be coming at you soon with another episode of the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. We have some interesting guests that are teed up, and we're doing a few more podcasts than we typically do for the summer months, and then we'll be back to our regular schedule beginning in September.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.